What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Ultimate Patriots Doctor Football Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remote tonight from my real live medical office in Dedham, Massachusetts. Joining me as always, the CEO of Hedgebetter and Braintree Mass, Justin Fine from the Hedgebetter Studios there. How you doing, my man? What is going on?
I am doing fantastic. How is everything with you?
Oh, things are great, man. How about those 3-8 Patriots? Let that sink in for you, buddy, huh?
I know. Well, you know what? I think we're, unfortunately, we're kind of getting used to the losing records around here.
That we are. And, you know, if you really look at it, let's face it, and we're going to get into this, they are well on their way to another 4 or 5 win season because because you look at how their season ends. What do they got? 6 games left, I think it is. And those last 3 games, forget about it. Buffalo, Chargers, Buffalo, that's a tough stretch to end it. So, yep. You know, for them to beat last year's win total, they're going to have to win 2 of those 3 games, most likely against Indy, Arizona, and Miami. And even that kind of sounds like a tall order.
Yeah, it does. I think they got an uphill battle in all these games. But you know what the funny thing is? I can see them competing in all of them too.
Yeah, I think Drake May makes them competitive, right, against anyone. I think he's that kind of player. So you're right.
Yeah, exactly. I think we can look forward to some good football games that we're gonna come out on the wrong side of, which again, not something that we're unfamiliar with in New England the last few seasons.
Unfortunately. Well, we got a terrific roster of topics. We're going to take a deep dive on the New England Patriots, as we always do on this podcast. We're going to give you approximately 1 good hour or so on the Pats. And of course, the always exciting non-football topic of the week, which will be the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight from Friday night, which I know you watch, and I can't wait to get into that, Justin. But let's kick it off with the kickoff. That is the opening take to set the table for the podcast. And I'm just going to throw it right out there like I always do. Pats are 3-8 right now, and I am not making excuses for them, Justin.
Yeah.
People can say it's the first year of Jerod Mayo. It's the first year of Wolf. They got a rookie quarterback. If people want to do that, that is A-okay. I am not on board with that. And I am not on board on that because I will objectively say this through 11 games. I'm 100% confident about this. Yep. This team did not have to be this bad of a team this year.
Agreed.
Being this bad of a team was the result of bad choices by the coaches from week to week and bad choices by the GM in the offseason. There was absolutely no excuse for losing a game like that, like they lost on Sunday. When you get a performance like they got from their young quarterback, and there were times, Justin, to me, and Matthew Stafford is a great quarterback, there were times where I felt like Drake May was the better quarterback on Sunday. He was at least the equal in many ways of Stafford. So you can't make the excuse anymore that they don't have the quarterback. This kid is elevating this team. He's elevating the players around him, and they still can't win games. I put the responsibility for that first and foremost on Elliott Wolf because the talent isn't there. And secondly, on a week-to-week basis, on Jerod Mayo, who does not have the coaching acumen to be in the position he's in. I said last week he wasn't a total disaster because he hasn't lost the locker room, and I give him credit for that. They're playing hard. Mayo is showing he's a leader, and he's showing that he is respected in his locker room, which I give him credit for because not a lot of all people in a situation that would be the case, but he doesn't know what he's doing, and it shows every week, and it showed on Sunday. I thought it's why they lost the game because I thought Sean McVay pantsed Jerod Mayo, to put it into one sentence, okay, coached circles around Jerod Mayo, and that was really the delta in the game in spite of Drake May's performance. Justin, your thoughts?
Yeah, 100%. I think it was pretty clear that, you know, with Sean McVay, and you know, it's funny, Jerod Mayo came out and he said afterwards, you know, I heard him say in a press conference that he felt like his team was in control for most of the game. He felt like the Patriots were in control. And I think that's such a funny thing to say because I totally understand that the Patriots looked good out the gate. I think maybe, you know, early on people were maybe a little surprised with how well the defense was playing. Like the fact that we scored first, it looked like we got up to a good start. But eventually it came down to the fact that Sean McVay was just able to outcoach us and we weren't able to make the right calls and the right adjustments to keep up with that. I really do feel like eventually the talent won out. Cream rose to the top. They had the better the weapons, they had the better coach, and they had the better scheme. And over the course of four quarters, you can't suppress that.
I understand why Mayo said that, though, because the time of possession, the Patriots, I think, won the time of possession battle and kind of did move the ball the whole game. And that's why it was really a disgrace that they were down by two scores on three separate occasions in the fourth quarter of this game. Because you look at the way the Patriots moved the ball.
Yep.
And you look at the way they held the controlled the clock. And you're like, how are they down by two scores right now? And it really did come down to just a couple big plays where I think Sean McVay showed that he was the superior coach, the superior scheme, and that was the difference to me.
Well, I think not only did he hit the nail on the head of, you know, when you talk about the better coach and the better scheme, but big plays, right? The Rams made a couple of big plays thanks to their big time playmakers that the Patriots just don't have. Again, we don't have, you don't have a Cooper Kupp. You don't have a guy who's capable at any point of breaking off a 40, 50 yard touchdown like he is and like he did.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, Justin, that you have to talk about the coaching if you're going to bring up that play. Because, I mean, what was that decision? And I said it at the time, that was a terrible decision to go with a zero blitz there. It's second and nine early in the third quarter. You just caught a huge break with the missed field goal before halftime. You're in the game. You don't need to swing for the fences. You need to get a stop, get the ball back into the hands of your young quarterback. They should have scored more than 10 points in that first half. They really should have, the way they moved the ball. You'd been moving the ball with ease the whole game. You don't need to gamble on defense. You need to get a stop and then get the ball back to your quarterback. I thought that was a terrible decision on the zero blitz, a terrible decision. And McVay, I mean, come on, he must have been snickering at him.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they just, you know, they shot themselves in the foot, both with some of their play calling. And I think, again, penalties. I mean, some unfortunate penalties. You know, I'm trying to remember if it was the first half, end of the first half or the beginning of the second half. But you know, the Patriots were threatening in the Rams in Rams territory, and instead of having a completion to Hunter Henry that would have set him up at, you know, first down inside the red zone, holding penalty pushed him back. They wind up punting. Right, they don't even get a field goal out of that drive. Rams take that possession and go score a touchdown. Right. So just
I'll go so far as to say, Justin, that was the turning point in the game.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%.
Right there. That was the second drive of the game.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. Just this team, I don't know whether it's a combination of, you know, whether it's the coaching, the players, a combination of both, but they're not able to string enough together, I think, to close out these games. You know, Drake May is only able to do so much, but there's just a lack of consistency, I think, when it comes to the coaching, and when it comes to what's the word I'm looking for? Not the integrity, but the discipline.
Yes. Well, let's get into that. I made a list of, there were some real interesting coaching decisions by Mayo in this game, and just like things that happened that I think were a reflection of the coaching that I wanted to go through with you. And so let's go. The first one was the play you just brought up, which was the Hunter Henry, the Drake May scramble to the right where he hits Hunter Henry on that 20-yard pass. It gets called back. That was the Patriots' second drive. They were up 7-0 at that point. They were moving the ball extremely well. They looked like they were in control of the game at that point. How many times have we seen, even in just these five games, Drake May make a good play and it gets overturned by a penalty on this offensive line? Yep. This offensive line is good for like four, five, six bad penalties a game. And that mistake, I thought, just changed the whole course of the game. If the Patriots score there, I feel like they win this game.
I totally, totally agree. And at the time, I remember saying to myself, you know, it just kind of went from bad to worse. I mean, you know, the play gets called back. Then instead of, forget about not you know, getting a potential touchdown on the drive. You can't even come away with a field goal. And then you give it right back to the Rams who go and score a touchdown. I mean, it just, everything kind of built for the rest of that game off of that flag. It really was, I think, to your point, one of the big reasons, if not the biggest reason, why the Patriots didn't win that game. I think if they continue that drive, I think they score a touchdown there. At the very least, I'm sure they come away with points and extend that to a 2-score lead.
Did you think it was the right call, Justin? Again, that you're taught, this one is the Vidarian Lowe one where he was lined up, I guess, illegally.
I'm not going to say I knew one way or another. Honestly, I didn't even really get a good look at the play and a good look at him to make that judgment call. But what do you think? I don't know. Did you get a good look at it?
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those ones where he was lined up like one half a step back, the one they were calling in the preseason the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's like, you look around the league and I feel like Kansas City's lined up like this pretty much every single play, not to be that Patriots fan that's whining about Kansas City. But like, I feel like I see people lined up, tackles lined up like that all the time.
Right.
And it doesn't get called. I do think it was technically illegal. It's the kind of mental mistake, in like you use the word discipline. It's the kind of discipline thing that, I'm sorry, a well-coached team doesn't make that mistake as often as the Patriots do.
Totally, totally. And look, it's not that that's an isolated incident. I think we're seeing week in and week out a number of, you know, potentially game-altering plays, at least one or two a game, that seem to be going against the Patriots due to that lack of discipline, due to these flags that just seem to really be throwing off any sort of momentum that they're able to generate.
And by the way, don't forget, the next drive, the third drive the Patriots had after the Rams scored, ended, I think they had another promising drive, the Patriots did, and I believe there was a personal foul on one of the Patriots' offensive linemen that set them back 15 yards and killed that drive as well.
Yeah, like, exactly. So there you go. You come out with momentum. You look to build on it, and you have you got drive killers and
two promising drives killed in the first half of the game.
Exactly, and that's when you needed to capitalize, because look, at the start of this game, the Patriots' defense, they held up okay to start the game, and it was only going to be a matter of time before Kupp and Nacua and Stafford, they got theirs and were able to put up some points. And you needed to put up as much points as you could and get a jump start, and you weren't able to do that.
Well, that's why, you know, you look at that first half, and the Patriots held the ball for 18 minutes.
Exactly.
And they had a lot of yards, and Drake May threw for over 100 yards in the first quarter. And you look at the scoreboard, they only scored 10 points. Well, why? Right. Because they drove up the field two times and then shot themselves in the foot and took 0 points on each of that second and third drive.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, look, to beat a team like that, you know, like part of capitalizing on your opportunities is keeping that offense off the field. I mean, you don't get those penalties. You extend those drives. That's less time for that offense to have the ball in their hands, less time for them to put points on the board.
What did you think, Justin, about the decision to punt from the Patriots 37 instead of kicking a field goal? That was another one in the second quarter.
Yeah, I didn't really get that. I was a little taken back. I know Sly doesn't have the biggest leg, but if you can't kick a 52-yard field goal in the NFL reliably, especially at home, I'm sorry. I mean, what I heard somebody say that it might have been particularly windy that day. You were at the stadium, right?
Yeah, it was windy. It was very windy. It was one of those days where the wind didn't have any one specific direction. And in fairness to Mayo, McVay passed on a chance to kick a 54-yard kick that would have iced the game in the fourth quarter in the exact same direction of the stadium. So, you know, that one, I know a lot of people are upset about that one. To me personally, that one didn't really bother me. But I think that, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that was the drive that was the drive that ended in the personal foul penalty that they got knocked back on. So that to me is more the problem in my book.
Right. Exactly.
All right. What about, we talked a little bit about that zero blitz, Justin. Any more thoughts that was coming out second play of the half or third play of the second half, coming out and just putting all your chips on the table there for Gerard Mayo? Any thoughts on that decision? I hated it. I already expressed that. What were your thoughts?
Sorry, wait, can you what decision specifically are you
the one that led to the Cooper Kupp touchdown?
Okay, you're talking about the blitz. You're talking about bringing the house.
Blitz. They all out blitz.
You know, it's tough. I you hope that you have the secondary, you know, guys like guys that can back you up if you're going to bring the house. And sometimes you got to get pressure on a guy like Stafford, make him get rid of the ball. But like, I mean, I don't know. You can't leave a guy like Cooper Kupp in one-on-one coverage with no help. I mean, he got that ball and there was nobody in between him and the end zone, not even anybody in sight.
And he was straight mocking the Patriots. You know, he held up the zero as he was gliding into the end zone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That was, And you know what? It was a perfect little move and a perfect little route by him because he took the inside leverage. He had the guy in his hip and he knew that there was nobody in between him and the end zone, and boom, he caught it. And it was a foot race at that point. And you know what, again, another big play by a big playmaker, something this organization hasn't had in a long time.
All right. I want to take you to the fourth quarter. Pats are down, I believe 21-10 at this point, and they are driving. And they are facing a 4th-and-2 from the 2. Horrible play calling, by the way, that got them in that. They had 1st-and-goal at the 6.
Right.
They threw a pass on 1st down, and then they ran it twice on 2nd and 3rd down. Hated the play calling. They decided to kick a field goal on 4th-and-2 from the 2. Justin, your thoughts about that decision?
Again,
I had 21-13 at that point.
Look, if there was ever an opportunity to play some situational football and say, I have a young quarterback and a young team that needs to develop, and when I get these opportunities to roll the dice and give them some situational experience, why not do it? What do the Patriots have to lose this season from rolling the dice in that situation and giving themselves some valuable experience, giving Drake May some valuable experience? We talked about that before. I mean, they still wind up losing the game anyway. So you can't say like it wound up being the right call to be conservative there. I think when in doubt for the rest of this season, you're not making the playoffs. You're not sniffing the postseason at this point. It's all about development. I think you have to take advantage of these situations when you get them.
Well, here's the thing. All right. He got booed out of the stadium. I'm sure you heard it on television.
Yeah.
It was not a popular decision.
Right.
At the time, I agreed with the decision to kick the field goal at the time because I felt like you have to make it a one-score game. You're trying to come back from behind. You can't pass up the opportunity late in the game to make it a one-score game. So I didn't hate the decision at the time. But the more I thought about it, I understand why people had a problem with it for the reason you just said. What do they have to lose?
Right. Exactly. Then, and that's really how I look at it with this team is, I mean, look, you know, the goal is that next year, the season after, like this team finds themselves playing some meaningful football games. And you want them to have that experience. You want them to, you know, have that situational football kind of under their belt. What do you have to lose this year by rolling the dice? I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer. There's just no reason with this team in their situation, with their personnel, everything. Just what is the point of being conservative? I don't understand it.
And there was still enough time left at that point where you could have gotten a stop, gotten the ball back, and still made up a 2-score deficit if you really had to, if you could have played some defense.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. So
what about this one, Justin? What about this one? The decision to, they're down 28-13. They have an awesome touchdown drive that ends in the Vidarian Lowe touchdown catch. The place is going nuts. They have all the momentum on their side. It was a beautiful drive from Drake May, a couple nice passes, right? 28-19 at that point. They kick the extra point instead of going for two. We criticized Jerod Mayo against Jacksonville when he did the opposite against the Jacksonville Jaguars in London a few weeks ago. Should the Patriots have gone for two there? That's one I didn't have a problem with personally. I think it was okay to go for one. I think it was the right move. It just, you got to kick the damn kick and not get a friggin' extra point blocked.
Exactly. I'd be curious to know, you know, was that Jerod Mayo kind of saying that he thinks he made a mistake the last time and that this was actually the right thing to do? Or is he maybe trying different things out in different situations? I'm not really sure. I feel like, though.
Yeah, like, what's the philosophy, right?
Right, exactly. Like, what's the rationale for doing it versus not doing it in those two situations? I'd be pretty curious to know that. But I look at it kind of in the same breath that we were looking at in the last topic, which is, why not be aggressive? Why not? Like, what does this team have to lose? Again, I think you need to be a little consistent with it. If you're not, because I can't figure out the rhyme or reason. And I think, again, you're erring too cautious.
Personally, Justin, like, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. Like, I ripped Mayo to shreds for what he did in London against Jacksonville. I'm not going to rip him for kicking the extra point and trying to keep it a one-score game. I thought that was 100% the right call. It was really an execution thing. Shame on them for not being able to block long enough to kick a friggin' right. extra point. I mean, that's the real problem here. Like, I can't, like, just rip Mayo for doing what I said he should have done 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago in Jacksonville. I'm just not going to do that. So yeah. I didn't have a problem with that one. How about this one? I think it was on the drive, the drive before that. Okay. When the drive after that, they're down 28-19 at this point. They get the ball back. They're having another nice drive. They get into the Rams territory. Jalen Polk. Okay, on 4th-and-1, they decide to go for it, which I love the call. Absolutely the right call at that point. Okay, Jalen Polk false starts and puts it from 4th-and-1 to 4th-and-6.
Yep.
And they have to kick a field goal instead of going for the touchdown there, taking the game out of their hands with a bad penalty. People, I don't think, realize the play before that, Jalen Polk lined up wrong. I don't know, you know, I don't know if you saw that on TV. May had to get him and put him in position, and he missed his block. The only reason Ramondre Stevenson didn't pick up that first down on third down is because Jalen Polk lined up wrong on third down too. Guy does not know what he's doing out there. You want to blame Jalen Polk, blame Jalen Polk. To me, that's coaching.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
it's both, I guess, but
it's worse because Jalen Polk, I think, has consistently been hurting more than helping. And for a guy that we've talked about that you kind of took with almost a first round pick and you passed up on some big names to get him, you'd want a little bit more out of him. So I get it. It's definitely a coaching problem, but he's consistently, I think, hindered more than helped. So, you know,
It's not even like he's not even just like not catching passes. He's had more penalties than passes the last few weeks.
Exactly. And it's everything in between. It's his lack of production. It's penalties. It's falling down during 2-point conversions, like in Jacksonville, right? It's literally it's everything in between that seemed, a couple drops here and there. It's everything that could seem to be potentially going wrong for him is going wrong. And you don't have the talent at wide receiver to have a guy that you put that type of draft capital into, play the way he's playing right now.
I agree. And you watch what Ladd McConkey is doing for the LA Chargers, who had another 100-yard game and touchdown on Sunday night. And you're like, this guy can't even line up right. It's week 11. Yep. He doesn't even know what he's doing. Yeah, I do blame the coaches for that, but I also blame the player for that. It's both of them, but it's an embarrassment. I mean, this was a first round pick, more or less, that you held. It was the 34th or 35th pick in the draft. It should be able to be converted into a tangible asset that will benefit this team on the field. Instead, you've got a guy who is not only not catching touchdowns or making an impact or catching passes, he can't even line up right in week 11. All right. It is an embarrassment.
Yeah. It's a total embarrassment. I mean, it's one of those, it almost just seems like this team is cursed when they take a wide receiver with draft capital. Totally. It's like,
why can't they draft wide receivers? It's bizarre.
I almost feel like it's their own fault for like constantly overthinking it. Cause you see all of these names come out that I feel like us as the general viewing public is all over, like knowing that these are good potential, long-term franchise wide receivers that are going to be talented. And year in and year out, even dating back to the Belichick era, we wind up passing on these guys thinking that, you know, there's opportunities elsewhere. I just don't see it. Like, it just seems to be a longstanding tradition with these Patriots extending over multiple coaches, multiple quarterbacks. They cannot hit on high draft capital wide receivers. And it just seems to me like they're overthinking it and trying to do too much.
And every single one of those guys drafted in that area, right before or right after that, except for Leggett, who went into an abyss in Carolina with absolutely no quarterback play to support him, have at least had some impact. You know, Worthy's making plays. Keon Coleman's making plays. Ladd McConkey's making plays. Ricky Pearsall got shot, and he had a touchdown, okay, and has caught some passes, right?
Right.
And then this guy, he is doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. He has probably been – I mean, I would have to look at the entire list, but you talk about wide receivers taken in the first two rounds. I mean, he's got to be the most disappointing, right?
It's hard to believe that they could have actually drafted a wide receiver who is less effective and impactful than Tyquan Thornton or N'Keal Harry. They're actually getting worse. Like N'Keal Harry is like a Hall of Famer compared to Jalen Polk. Like N'Keal Harry should have a plaque in Canton compared to Jalen Polk. Yeah. So they've actually gotten worse with each one of these guys. You can look at the trend line. Go back to who was the guy from Virginia they took in the second round? Aaron Dobson, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was at least Chad Jackson, maybe like caught a couple touchdowns. Like it's the trend line is going down. Like I don't know how it could get worse next time. What they're going to have to draft, I don't know, something even worse.
I don't know how you can't get much worse at that point. But yes, and Tyquan Thornton just getting released. Like it's just constant failure in the first couple rounds with these wide receivers. It's honestly, you gotta wonder you can't just say it's bad luck at this point because it's happening too often, too consistently, for too long to just say that.
And going against a league-wide trend.
Right.
League-wide trend is we're plucking wide receivers out of the sky. Everyone's taking a wide receiver, right? Teams are just taking anyone, and they're at least okay.
Yeah.
Oh, not the Patriots. No. Oh, no. They can't find a guy that can catch 30 passes.
No. It was actually funny. I was trying to think the other day. Who has been the Patriots' best receiver this year? And it's Hunter Henry. And that's probably where your problem starts. The fact that you have a tight end probably approaching the back half of his career, you know, in his late 20s, early 30s, and he's your best weapon.
Yeah, he's their best weapon for sure. There's no doubt about it. He's their best weapon. Who's their best receiver?
Yeah.
I mean, it's I guess Kayshon Boutte, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like Pop Douglas is a very specialized kind of weapon where you have to kind of scheme him into the game. And there's certain times and places where he can be very effective. And then there's other situations where he just disappears. So I don't feel like he's reliable, I guess, or consistent, but I like Pop Douglas as a player, but it's probably Boutte that's their best receiver right now, which is kind of frightening if you think about it.
And that was going to exactly be my point, is that Booty's probably been their best receiver. And this is a guy that we questioned if he was going to make the team this year. He didn't really do much in his rookie year. And even still, I don't consider him a number one or potentially even a number two. So you get some problems that you're going to have to address.
No question about it. Yeah. And any thoughts about the Tyquan Thornton release too? Like he's gone. Did you see who picked him up?
I didn't know who did.
Kansas City.
Oh, there you go.
He's a member of the Kansas City Chiefs practice squad.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. Sure, towards the end of the season, we'll see a red zone highlight of him catching a 60-yard touchdown from Mahomes.
I agree with that. And I don't know if you noticed, both Lil Jordan Humphreys and Jonnu Smith scored yesterday or Sunday.
Yeah.
They both scored touchdowns. Nelson Aguiar has had a good year in Baltimore.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm just waiting for Tyquan Thornton to whatever end up somewhere else and show he's not as bad as he was.
Yeah, he'll be serviceable, a serviceable member of the rotation at Kansas City.
Right, exactly. All right. What else? And then one other one I want to bring up, and I think this ties into a little bit the play calling down the stretch. Right.
Yeah.
In some ways, I thought Alex Van Pelt called a good game. I think, frankly, I don't think Van Pelt is a bad coach. I really don't. It's the lack of play call experience in the context of who the head coach is. That's the problem. But let's be honest. If you're looking at the Patriots like leadership triumvirate, which is Covington, Van Pelt, and Mayo,
yeah.
Van Pelt is the only one that's like remotely qualified to be in the job he's in. Okay, he never called plays before. At least he's been an offensive coordinator before. Yep. So I think he's getting better. I think he's been okay. Not great, but okay. I think he deserves credit for May's development. But the conservative play calling at times this year has been bad. And in the second half, I thought it cost them. It feels like they're afraid to put the ball in May's hands. I think they got to just let it rip with Drake May a little bit and accept the fact he's going to make some mistakes and bad plays because he really is their only hope. And I do feel like if they had been a little more aggressive with him, especially in the second half, I mean, how many times they run the ball on first down, you know? I think that might have won this game if they were more aggressive with the play calling.
Yeah, I agree. I think for the rest of this season, you need to be in aggressive teaching development mode. Like there's just no reason. You are almost mathematically eliminated, right? If not, you will be in a week or two. There's just no reason to hold anything back. Let Drake May open up. Let him continue to develop and grow. You already got to factor in that he's going to have, what is it, either 6 or 7 games less under his belt in terms of development heading into year two than a lot of his counterparts, right? Let him rip. Let it rip. There's nothing to lose for this team.
Absolutely. But do you think Van Pelt is going to do that? Because what have we seen from him so far this year, Justin, that makes you think that he is the kind of offensive coordinator that's going to let him rip, or Mayo for that matter? Like, They've proven to be, I think, relatively conservative on both sides of the ball, generally speaking. Zero blitz this weekend, notwithstanding, right? And I think that I have a hard time. I mean, AVP, I don't know. This is kind of his modus operandi. This is what he was in Cleveland. It's what he's been before. I don't know if he's the kind of coordinator that's going to let Mayo just kind of let it rip.
To be honest, when you were first saying that I was almost thinking that Mayo was a bigger hindrance in that than Van Pelt. That is kind of my thinking. So yeah, Mayo waited, what was it, 7 games to give Drake May a chance to start. And now we all know that he probably should have been out there in week one. It's like, is that the type of mentality or the type of coaching that's going to err on the side of just saying, hey, screw it, let the guy go out there and let it fly?
But do you think that was Mayo's decision? Do you think Mayo would have started him in week one if it was totally up to him?
You know, I guess we'll never know. I tend to think he might have still started Brissett week one.
I mean, we'll never know, but I think Mayo got a lot. He can say it's his decision. I think there was a lot of internal pressure for him to not play May. And I think it was the wrong decision. Clearly at this point, like, this team in this season would have been a much better place if Drake May had been the quarterback from the beginning. I think we know that now, you know, from what we've seen from him in only 5 or 6 games. You know, the funny thing, Justin, about Alex Van Pelt is that, and this is a terrible situation, and it's why part of me thinks the Patriots already kind of blew this rebuild in some ways. And I know that sounds crazy because it's still starting, but you know, you really hate to have to transition to a new offensive coordinator in the second year of a quarterback's career, but they're kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place with Van Pelt, where I don't know if we're seeing from him that he really is the kind of innovator and the kind of guy you need in today's NFL, especially when you've got an asset like Drake May. But, you know, at the same time, do you want to have Drake May learning a whole new system already and be one of those quarterbacks in year three where they're saying, oh, he's already had 2 new systems in 3 years. Oh, he's been 4 systems in 6 years. Is that what you want for his career? So the Patriots painted themselves into that corner with this AVP hire. All that said, even though he's probably the most likely to get fired of this coaching staff next year, he's actually the most qualified of the 3 of them. And I think he is probably a mediocre to maybe sub-mediocre offensive coordinator. And in a way, that actually might make him their best coach.
Yeah. And, you know, I think when it comes to AVP, like, next year, to your point, right? Like, I don't want Drake May to have to go through 2 or 3 coordinators in 2 or 3 years. I mean, I think that's a recipe of a disaster. I can't point to too many situations coming into the league where that's proven okay and beneficial for a rookie quarterback, right? I think the next step, logically is now you got to get weapons, right? You know, you're pretty sure that you have the quarterback that you're going to be building around, right? Get him some weapons, get him some talent, and then see what that combination of talent can do with his coaching. If you have the talent, right? If you have the weapons, you have the quarterback, you know the talent is there, and you still aren't producing or hitting that level on offense, then it's a very clear, I think, in necessary, you know, cut and replace with Van Pelt. But while Drake May is still out there, you know, with an average offensive line throwing to subpar weapons, I just don't think you can fully get rid of him.
So you think they should bring AVP back?
I think they should bring him back for year two with obviously a much upgraded personnel. I think they need better weapons on offense, and I think they got to bring him back, give him a chance.
I think we can agree that this is the way it's trending. It's trending towards AVP coming back.
Right.
And that's probably means a good thing. It means May is developing. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I mean, look, it's a tough call, but I agree with you. Like, I think, and you know, when we talk about even Mayo and we talk about AVP and we talk about Covington and the coaching hasn't been good. I especially think Mayo and Covington actually have been worse than Van Pelt, even though I'm not a huge Van Pelt guy. I think he's been better than Mayo and Covington. We can't forget how bad the talent is. And when you talk about making chicken salad out of chicken crap, right? And that's what all three of these guys are trying to do. Like, let's not pretend ourselves that this is a good roster. It's not. They have a good young quarterback who's elevating them and a lot of holes and have had a lot of injuries. So, you know, it is a little unfair at times to judge the coaching, just like it's unfair to judge the quarterback play in some sense, when the talent is this bad in so many places on this roster.
Yeah, exactly. And we've said that numerous times on this show. We definitely have our reservations about the coaching, rightly so, but you're never really going to get a truly accurate assessment of what you have in these coaches until you have sufficient talent surrounding this team and surrounding them. So, yeah.
And if it doesn't work, Justin, and if they are in a bit of a predicament, doesn't it all fall to the crafts at the end of the day at this point?
Yeah, exactly. And look, we've been questioning a long time on this podcast. When are the crafts okay to blame? How much blame do they deserve? We've been saying this for years on the show.
A couple years.
And you know what? You really talk about it. You know, when you talk about this rebuild, right? In needing to develop in you know, grow the talent in this roster. You can talk about spending money and going out in getting free agents, and you know, you can talk about the draft, and look, there's obviously numerous ways to get players, to get talent. But at the end of the day, it's like this rebuild is only going to happen as quickly as we fill the holes, right? Like you're not going to just get coaches and get Drake May and say, okay, well, we're a competent football team now. We can, you know, we're going to be in the playoffs. So we're going to contend. That very, very rarely happens. This is not a Mahomes and Andy Reid situation. This is not a Brady Belichick situation. You need pieces in this roster to bring it all together.
You do. And it's not enough to just have the quarterback.
Right.
I'm sorry. You can say Mahomes and Reid or Brady Belichick. There were a lot of good players on those teams.
There were.
You know, that made big plays and were huge parts of why they've had success. Look at all these teams that are winning this year and in recent years in this league. They're filled with good players up and down the roster beyond their quarterback. So hitting a grand slam on the quarterback, if that is in fact what they did, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, it feels like it could be, that's not enough to make this team a viable NFL franchise. It needs more than that. It needs a lot of good players and it needs good coaching.
Yep.
And you know, one of the things I thought about this week, and I want to hear what you have to think about this, is where would the Patriots' record be right now if they had hired Mike Vrabel as their head coach instead of Gerard Mayo? I would feel great about the direction of this franchise today if Mike Vrabel was the coach and Drake May was the quarterback. I think they'd have 5 or 6 wins right now as opposed to 3. And I think I would feel so much more confident that this thing was headed in the right direction than I do now, where I'm still concerned about Mayo, even though I know that they probably hit on the quarterback.
I totally agree. I mean, you know, this is a 3-win team now. I'm giving them at least 5-6 wins at this point if Vrabel was the coach. You know, Vrabel, you would at least trust, you know, in Vrabel's experience. You know, situationally, he probably would have had us in a better spot in a couple of these games. I mean, look, I know we talk about the fact that, you know, there was a lot of pressure from the front office to keep Drake May on the sideline, but we saw what Vrabel did in Tennessee. I mean, Will Levis came in right away last year and played, right? So it's like, you know, maybe you have Drake May starting week one. Maybe you have a more disciplined team, right? Maybe you have a little bit more experience in that locker room. And just maybe you still have a season left ahead of you being able to play some meaningful football.
I mean, don't you feel like if Mike Vrabel is the head coach, don't you just have a lot more confidence that whatever the right thing is, they're going to do the right thing?
Yeah, I do.
You know, whether it's playing Drake May, not playing Drake May, doing this, doing that, whatever. If you got a guy with that kind of experience, you're more likely to get to the right decision.
Totally agree. And side note, aside from just the Patriots, I can't understand how Mike Vrabel still does not have a job right now. But yeah, very crazy. If you had had a guy in there with that type of experience, I think you'd get pretty much all the same benefits that Jerod Mayo is bringing to the table without some of the shortcomings. You would have a defensive-minded young coach who's a player's leader, has the locker room, right? You would have all the same benefits that you're getting with Mayo without some of the drawbacks.
Agreed. And it just, the whole thing just puzzles me. I will never understand it. I hope Mayo figures it out over the next couple of years. And let's face it, Justin, like we've seen Mike McCarthy win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers in his prime. Yeah. So my point is a really great quarterback will cover up a lot of stink on the roster and a lot of stink in the coaching staff. So if May ends up being what we think he could be, and we're not sure if he is that yet, let's be clear, but he's got that high ceiling. You know, that's the kind of break that Jerod Mayo needs to buy him some time to get a clue, frankly, and to learn the job on the job. Mayo was put in a very unfair position, but it really falls back to the crafts because they did this. And it's like, it's just hard to understand the logic of what they did.
Exactly. They let us get to this point.
So many of the questions facing this franchise going into year two of Drake May really tie back to the decision to bring in Jerod Mayo.
Yep. 100%.
All right. Let's see. Where are we going to go next? Let's talk a little bit about the defense, Justin. I do want to quickly check in with you about that because this was a tough game at times on defense. I'm afraid of what they would have looked like if Barmore wasn't out there, because I thought he helped them when he was out there. Justin, we talk so much about May and Mayo. Are we forgetting this defense has some serious holes on it right now?
No, I mean, I don't think we are. It'd be tough to – watching the way this defense is playing, it'd be tough to not recognize that there are some serious holes on it. I mean, look, they got some good talent. We've said that at each level, some guys that you can build around. I know they still got a couple of injuries, but there are a lot of spots that they know still need some development and they still need to plug some holes. I mean, it's just not enough right now. And again, I know Barmore's just coming back. I know Juwan Bentley is injured. I know they had to get rid of Jabril Peppers. Like they traded Judon. Like I know they lost a lot, but there's not enough to completely round out this defense. And you're seeing it. They can't get stops when they need to. It's inconsistent.
Yeah. And they're not making turnovers. Where is the playmaking? Like again, how important or impactful would a turnover have been in a game like Sunday?
Yeah.
Where that could, you know, I was waiting for someone to make a play. And it never came. And I think that's 2 weeks in a row without a turnover. It feels like they're just not making those big plays that we've seen from this defense at times in the past.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you got a defense like this. I mean, you know, they clearly are not a just stop them all, just put up a wall type of defense. So you're going to need to get lucky and force a couple of turnovers here and there. You don't do that, you make it really tough on yourself.
Absolutely. Let's talk, Justin, a little bit about the quarterback's performance on Sunday, because I do have some thoughts about that that we kind of haven't got into yet. Drake May was terrific at times on Sunday, but I'm not going to lie. I'm a little concerned about the turnovers, and I'm not as concerned about the interceptions, because I think they're to some extent expected, because, you know, he's a rookie and let's face it, the team sucks and he doesn't get much protection. The receivers are terrible. They're not getting space. So I feel like that's par for the course, but I am pretty concerned about the fumbles, because he's fumbled, I think, like five times or four times already in six games, which is a lot. And as much as he's showing tremendous upside, a part of me still is not 100% sold that he's going to be the guy yet. And it's really because he's turning the ball over and they're still not winning these close games.
Yeah. I mean, the second part, winning the close games, I think you got to take that with a grain of salt, because I think without him, they wouldn't even be close games where you have a chance to win.
That's true.
Right. The fumbling is a little bit more concerning, because, you know, like you said, with interceptions, you can chalk a lot of that up to being a rookie and learning and developing and growing in the league. But fumbling almost seems to be like a mental thing, right? It just seems to be like your head's not in it. Like you're taking your mind off ball security. You got the nerves. I don't know what it is, but fumbling to me is just a very different issue than throwing an interception. So I do agree with that. Hopefully it is still just the fact that he's a rookie and he's making a couple dumb mistakes. But it's definitely a little bit more concerning. I totally agree where you're coming with that. I'm not super concerned, but I am. It does pique my interest.
If you projected Drake May's numbers now over 17 game season, right?
Yeah.
You would have a 4,000 plus yard passing season.
Yeah.
A 30 plus yard touchdown season, which is great.
Yeah.
And then 20 interceptions in like maybe 10 or 11 fumbles.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah. You're starting to hit that Jameis Winston territory at that point.
Right. And like May is a home run hitter. And the thing that concerns me a little about it is that he was like this in college. This is what he was at UNC. He was a home run hitter at UNC. He turned the ball over a lot at UNC. So I need to see that part of his game not go away completely, because that's not how it works, but diminish over the next few years. Now, if I'm going to reassure myself a little, look at Josh Allen or Pat Mahomes. Yeah. And they've had times in their career where they've turned the ball over a ton. And look where they are.
Yeah, I look at Drake May and I say, you know what's going to help him the most is getting weapons in a better O-line, right? Like that's going to be the best way you help him reduce his interceptions. And
agreed. 100% agree with you.
You know what 100%. I mean? So that's number one. Obviously, part of that is just going to be his own personal growth and development, both physically and mentally. But until he's at the point where he is sufficiently protected and he's throwing to NFL quality wide receivers, playmaking, difference making receivers, it's tough to sit here and contradict him, because he's already going above and beyond what he should have to be doing.
Agreed. I agree with that. And it's an area of concern, but I'm not totally pushing the panic button, because as you alluded to, this team sucks. And just to give the perfect example from Sunday's game, right? Like, how responsible was he for either of those turnovers? I think you could argue neither one of them was really on him. Now, okay, you know, the Pop Douglas one, I don't know. I thought Douglas ran the wrong route. So I put that more on Pop Douglas than I do Drake May. And from where I sit in the stadium, I had a great view. And I'm like watching that ball glide through the air. And I'm like, turn around, turn around, turn around. If Pop Douglas had just turned around, that would have been a huge play at a huge moment in the game. Let's not forget it was 3rd and 13. They needed to take a chance at that point. So that one, I really put more on the receiver. The fumble, again, he had like a second to throw the ball. How can you blame him for that? So to your point, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's just step one. even if Drake May doesn't improve an ounce on his own, you get him a better O-line, you get him some better weapons, those numbers are going to go down naturally.
Yeah, I think that that's part of it. But it is an area of concern. Like if this doesn't improve. Now I want to go to some of the positive, because there was an article on ESPN.com today. And if you have ESPN Plus, you can read it. If you don't, I'm going to just barf out the stats here for those that can't get behind the paywall. But I was actually kind of taken aback by how good May has been with some of these advanced stats. And I don't know if you're aware of this. He leads the NFL in having the lowest inaccurate throw percentage since he's been the Patriots starter at 9.9%. His accuracy has been elite since he's come in. I was surprised by that.
Yeah, well, I mean, not – it's funny because I didn't know that, but just after passing the eye test, it doesn't shock me. I mean, he's been a pretty accurate quarterback.
He was throwing darts on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think we've kind of seen that. Since he came in, he's shown that ability to thread the needle.
He has. I mean, I feel like there's been a couple of times where I felt like he missed throws that I thought he should have hit. But I guess that's like the nature of the position as well. Like I'm thinking of the Hunter Henry one in Chicago last week where he hits Hunter Henry on that third down and the game is over at that point. He missed him in the end zone and threw it behind him. But they threw some stats out. I just want to fire at you before we get to the non-football topic of the week, which is EPA, expected points added per dropback. Since May's been in there, he's seventh in the NFL. Jacoby Brissett was 25th.
Yeah.
Okay. His success rate on plays is ninth in the NFL. Brissett was 18th. His first down and touchdown rate is fourth in the NFL. Brissett was 24th. His completion percentage over expected is fourth in the league. Yeah. Brissett was 21st. Okay. Brissett had a negative number on that, by the way. His scramble rate also third in the league. So May has had some elite statistics. If you look at these advanced statistics, some elite metrics that I think are super encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's good to see that not only is he passing the eye test, but the metrics are backing that up as well. Because like you said, I don't think you can definitively say that they have their guy of the future. But the signs are pointing in the right direction. Things are trending in the right direction.
Strongly
pointing in the right direction, both from a look and feel standpoint and from an analytical standpoint.
Well, you have to look and you have to hope that every time he makes a mistake like he made on Sunday, that he learns from it and he doesn't repeat it. If he's making this mistake still in 3 years, then it's a problem. But for him to make these mistakes now, I think it is kind of par for the course, especially when you consider everything we're talking about. We always have to throw the caveat out there that he's doing this with nothing around him. Like when Drake May is the most accurate passer in the NFL, let's bear in mind, he's throwing a Kayshon Booty and Tyquan Thornton, you know, and Austin Hooper. So that just speaks even more well of who he is.
Yep.
All right, let's bring it up, Justin, the non-football topic of the week, segment on the show every week. Let's get into it. The fight watched around the world, the fight that broke Netflix on Friday night. Your thoughts on the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight from Friday, Justin?
Yeah, I think
I watched it.
You know, I think social media and the promoters and whoever was, you know, just kind of had their hand in the buzz and the hype did a fantastic job of making everybody think that a guy who was using a cane, you know, a month and a half ago had turned back the clock and was going to come in looking like a young version of himself. And it just wasn't the case. Mike Tyson looked good for a 58-year-old man, but that's exactly what he was. He was a 58-year-old
man. Did he really? Like, I don't think he looks good for a 58-year-old guy. Like, I think there's a 58-year-old guy somewhere out there that could have beaten Jake Paul.
I mean, you know what, maybe the thing is, here's the other thing too, is that Jake Paul openly said, and I believe this, you know, I was talking to a couple of boxer buddies of mine and they kind of said the same thing, you know, Jake Paul could have killed him, right? Like Jake Paul held up, like he didn't want to hurt Tyson. Like if he went hard, you know, he could have done some damage. I think Jake Paul, to his credit, let Mike Tyson kind of stick around and do his thing. And you know what? Look, again, a month ago, Mike Tyson was almost, you know, practically in a, using a cane. He had had some medical episodes. I just don't understand why we all thought he was going to come in and all of a sudden turn the clocks back. But that was the hype. That was how it was billed. And it just clearly was not the case. I mean, he just, he looked like an old man.
I thought Tyson actually looked really good in the first two rounds.
Yes.
And I thought the judge scored Tyson as the winner for the first two rounds. And I thought Tyson looked quick and did look good.
Yep.
But his endurance and his conditioning, which, let's face it, Mike Tyson has lived hard. Yep. Like, this is no 58-year-old guy that's like doing Ironman triathlons and eating like organic celery sticks. Like, we're talking Mike Tyson. Like, he's ripping drugs. He's chasing women. He's drinking, and he's lived. Like, Mike Tyson has lived. Yeah. So it shouldn't be surprising that he just, you know, completely got gassed after two rounds. There were times in those first two rounds where he showed flashes of Kid Dynamite, of the Mike Tyson of the 80s, but he just couldn't sustain that. And you're right. For the last six rounds of that fight, both Tyson was very defensive, and Paul probably did kind of lay off him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it was definitely a disappointment. Thank God we didn't have to pay for it. But I will say, aside from the fight, what's up with Netflix? Every time Netflix has done a live streaming event, they've dropped the ball completely. For like a company that's that big, in trying to do that much, you should be able to stream an event. Like, that was ridiculous.
Do you have regular cable, Justin? Or
no?
All streaming. I hate all the streaming. I will never get rid of cable. And that is the perfect example of why. Yeah. It sucks. Like, the spinning wheel, right? And you're just like, I had to log in, log out, and log back in like 10 times before I could watch the fight. And it's just infuriating. And I'm sorry, if that fight was on cable, that does not happen.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Look, I didn't even get to watch it on Netflix. I had to watch a TikToker stream of it.
Really?
That was the only way I was able to watch it. I had friends texting me. None of their Netflix were working. I started the night out for the fight at a bar. The bar couldn't get it to work. It was just massive problems across the board for everybody. You don't expect to have those issues from a company like Netflix. So not only was the fight itself awful, but the production in the stream itself was awful. Really hope they get that figured out moving forward.
And you know what? All this said, like, the production was awful. Tyson wasn't up to the challenge. Right. Blah blah blah. Evander Holyfield looked like a zombie in the pre-fight show. Whatever. All the bad things, right? It was still great entertainment.
Yeah.
It was great theater.
Yeah.
And it made me realize how much I miss big time boxing, because when I was a kid boxing was a huge thing, I think, in this country at one point. And I kind of caught the tail end of that with like the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
In mid 90s, it kind of went away. And it made me realize how much I miss big time boxing. It was great to have that kind of big time event again.
It is. And you know what? As much as people kind of rag on some of these celebrity fights and how it, it's watering down the sport, I will say some of these big celebrity fights are the only ones worth actually getting excited about in getting hyped about. So I hope it actually winds up reviving the sport a little bit and we're able to see some of these new superstars creating some hype, because I totally agree. A good boxing match is just classic. And they're just too and far in between today. It seems like it's all been reduced to this celebrity stuff.
After the fight, Justin, Paul said that he could beat Mike Tyson in his prime. That is probably the most ridiculous, laughable thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, Mike Tyson in his prime, his like late 80s prime, would have literally turned him into mincemeat and spit him out.
Yeah, that's the definition of clickbait. I mean, that's a YouTuber and TikToker knowing how to get YouTube videos and TikTok videos.
Yeah, right. There you go. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
All right, man. Any other thoughts on this fight?
No. I think that wraps it up.
I'm looking forward to Jake Paul versus who's the Ultimate Fighter guy? Connor McDavid, is that it? Connor, what's his name?
McGregor?
Connor McGregor, yeah. That's what they're saying is going to be the next big one.
Huh. Well, you know what?
We're all going to watch it, right?
We're all going to watch it.
Great theater.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great theater.
Exactly.
Awesome, man. All right. Let's, before we wrap it up, Justin, and move to the Around the League podcast, let's just take a quick look at this game next week with the Dolphins. The Patriots have had a house of horrors in Miami over the last few years. They cannot seem to beat that team either in Foxborough or down there. Let me say this. I'm calling it again. I like the Patriots with 7, and I think I like them to win this game. I think that Miami team has a lot of problems. I don't think they're a great team. Drake May, I think you could argue, is the better quarterback at this point. I know Tua has the better weapons, fine. I feel like May is going to keep them in a lot of these games just by being who he is. And if he can just not turn the ball over 3 times or 2 times, I mean, maybe he does 1, but if he can just limit the turnovers and be himself, make Drake May plays, I think they can win this game.
Yeah, I think they can win too. I mean, if you know, you ask me, gun to my head, who am I taking? I probably take Miami just because I can't remember the last time this team's beaten Miami. Do you know off the top of your head? I mean,
yeah, I do, because they beat them in 2022 when Skylar Thompson
played,
was the quarterback. So that was the last time. That was probably the last time.
Because Tua is undefeated versus the Patriots, isn't he?
Tua has never lost to the Patriots.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. They just seem to have our number.
It's a couple things, but the biggest thing is it's a quarterback driven league, and the Patriots haven't had a quarterback a good quarterback since 2019.
True. And we also haven't had a defense that can stop a healthy Tyreek and Waddle when Tua's clicking, you know? That's definitely going to be part of it.
I think this cornerback, I mean, we saw Christian Gonzalez, the way he matched up against Tyreek last year.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Jones and Marcus Jones is very quietly having a terrific season as a cornerback. So, I mean, look, this team might not match up so bad with them anymore.
No, I think the Patriots are going to keep it competitive. I think it's going to turn into a little bit of a shootout. And I really don't hate taking the Patriots to win the game. I love taking them with the 7 points. We'll see. I'm still going to give the Dolphins a slight advantage, but I'm all over the Patriots with the points, and money line wouldn't shock me. Let's say that.
Yeah, I'll probably take the 7. I like the Patriots to win, but if I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, it's probably going to be with the 7.
Right.
But I totally would. I think the Patriots have a real chance to win this game. And I am looking at the forecast. It's going to be 75 and sunny in Miami on Sunday. And I think that's a big factor too this time of year, because it's been warm up here. But it, you know, when they get those like 95 degree days in November and December down south, which sometimes they do get, and there's no way a team from the north can go down there and be conditioned for that. So that's not going to be the case on Sunday. It's going to be reasonably warm, not much different from what we've had at times in the last few weeks. I think that serves the Patriots' advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be a big Hunter Henry game. I don't know why, but I'm calling it. I could look for a Hunter Henry 2-touchdown game coming this weekend.
I would love that, Justin. I'm putting him on. I'm going to do a daily fantasy team with my son, and I'm going to pick Hunter Henry because you said that.
There you go. All right.
So don't, if you disappoint my son, that's your fault.
He said, I can't disappoint my godson. No, no. Yeah, let's go, exactly. Hunter Henry.
There you go. All right, Mrs. Any other thoughts about the Pats, bud, before we wrap it up?
No, I think I think that's it. Last thing I'll say is, look, like I said earlier in the podcast, keep aggressive, take advantage of these situations coming up, use the rest of the season for development. And at the very least, it's going to give us a more exciting product in the field when we know that we don't have much meaningful football left.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to see Drake May tighten up his game a little and win a few games. That's really what I'm looking for in these last 6 games.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see them steal a game against Buffalo or the Chargers, a team they have no business beating.
Agreed.
Just because Drake May puts them in position to win a game like that.
Totally agree.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Ultimate Patriots Doctor Football Podcast. I want to thank everyone who listened to this 1 hour deep dive on the New England Patriots. We will catch you next week. Everyone, have a terrific week and enjoy the game in Miami.